Thank you again for joining us on this for this conversation on Secretary Tillerson's upcoming trip to Africa. Today we are joined by Dr. Koulibaly, Brahima Koulibaly. He is the Senior Fellow and Director of the Africa Growth Initiative here at Brookings. We also have Vonda Felbaugh-Brown. She's a Senior Fellow at the Center for 21st Century Security Intelligence in the Foreign Policy Program here at Brookings. And we have Whitney Schneidman, a non-resident fellow with the Africa Growth Initiative. So we're going to get started in just a moment. If everybody on the line, if all the reporters could just go around and tell me your name and your affiliation, that'd be great.
Hello, my name is Sari Nandamondi from the BBC in Nairobi.
My name is John Akinbe from the Financial Times. I'm also in Nairobi.
Robbie Grammer from Foreign Policy, based in D.C.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Just a reminder as we get started, this entire conversation is on the record, so feel free to attribute your quotes. I'm also going to have a transcript available after the call, and I'll make sure to email it out to everybody. And when you're not speaking, I ask that you please have your phone on mute. And for everybody, please, once you begin speaking, just identify yourself. So I thought we'll start with Whitney.
Okay, thanks, Christina. I guess I'll just give my thoughts on the overview. I think this trip seems to be pretty much a listening tour by Secretary Tillerson. He's going to, I think as you all know, to Chad, Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Nigeria. And, you know, the themes of security clearly are paramount. The questions of democratic governance have to be very high on the agenda, certainly in Ethiopia, Kenya and Nigeria, but I know that trade and investment are also issues at the top of Secretary Tillerson's mind. I guess from my perspective, it seems that there are no evident deliverables, and there are no initiatives that are going to be announced. So the question becomes whether or not the Trump administration plans to follow up on any of the important programs started by previous administrations, such as AGOA, such as Power Africa, such as PEPFAR, such as the Young Africa Leaders Initiative, such as Feed the Future. So I think questions will be put to Secretary Tillerson along those lines. Clearly, there are going to be some difficult issues for the Secretary to respond to. Certainly, President Trump's alleged comments, negative comments about Africa, are going to be a factor in this trip. But also, this administration's stated intention to cut the State Department budget 30%. So how he's going to reconcile all of these different dynamics, I think, will be an interesting challenge for the Secretary.
Thanks, Whitney. Dr. Koulibaly, do you want to go ahead and give some remarks?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Christina. So I do think that this trip is actually a quite welcome development. Because if you've looked at since the administration came into power last year, the top three U.S. officials, that would be President Trump himself, Vice President Pence, and the Secretary of State, they visited other regions of the world. Africa was the exception. So I think this trip comes in to indeed signal that the continent remains on the radar of the agenda. So in terms of its own symbolism, I think it's important and sends important signals. And it kind of builds off a meeting they had last November with about 37 ministers from Africa. But I think, as Whitney mentioned, when you look at the set of countries that are being visited, I think it kind of reinforces the perception that security indeed is the overwhelming focus. And it remains to still be seen in terms of the commercial front and development, what the agenda is from this administration. And on the diplomatic front, we're still waiting to see appointment of some key senior officials, such as Assistant Secretary of State for Africa, and also some important ambassador positions in Africa that we haven't yet seen quite filled. So in a nutshell, my observations since the inauguration last year in 2016 is on the three main pillars of the foreign relations, development, defense, diplomacy, you can call it 3Ds. We're seeing more action on the defense side, but not as much action on the other two pillars. And it kind of looks like, but I see them all as being wheels of the same vehicle. And if you have one out spinning the others, you don't get to accelerate the vehicle as much as you would like. So what we're hoping is that the trip would be the beginning of a process to engage the continent and to begin a dialogue about what relationship, U.S.-Africa relationship, can really be, because the continent has a lot of potential and a lot to offer, and that's being recognized by Africa's other partners who are quite aggressive in fostering the relationships. And I see the competition only getting stronger. And unless the U.S. also gets a bit more proactive on all fronts, you risk falling further behind.
Thank you, Dr. Koulibaly. Vanda?
Sure, thank you. I want to pick up on the point about more action being on defense. That's certainly been the case with the Trump administration in Africa. It's often been the case with Trump administration in other regions, with President Trump systematically dismissing or downgrading political action at various points, talking about that internal politics are up to countries themselves, across the world often embracing highly problematic authoritarian leaders. And that is very interesting in the context of the countries that he is visiting, where the U.S. has some of the most visible, most immediate security interests, or that are involved in crucial regional security issues, but where just about in every of the countries visited, there are currently very significant domestic political tensions. And so as Whitney said at the beginning, the secretary might be coming there to be listening, but he is coming to countries where there is very significant political, if not outright turmoil, certainly political contestation in which local U.S. Diplomats have been keenly involved in, and where there certainly will be expectation that the secretary is coming in with some concrete message, whether this is Kenya, whether this is Ethiopia, even in Chad and Nigeria. There are also very specific political security issues, for example, with respect to Chad, a crucial country in the anti-Boko Haram G5 space, yet a country that is essentially bankrupt in supporting financially its military forces. So even though we don't have a visible political crisis there as yet, we have some real difficult political issues surrounding the security deployment. And so these countries will be looking for a message. They will be looking for initiatives. And the secretary's, if the secretary's position ends up being merely listening, wise as it is sometimes for a great power to have the capacity to do that, the timing of it might be quite awkward as real difficult political issues are being sorted out. And as there are very immediate, highly visible security issues or political crises, you know, one of the security issues, of course, is Nigeria with the result with the new kidnapping, and attack on the IDP camp and then surrounding pressure on Buhari in North Iran.
All right. Thank you, Vonda. I guess we'll open up for some questions. Just a reminder, please identify yourself before speaking.
Yes, my name is Ferdinand Omondi from the BBC. Whitney has just spoken about this being a listening trip and it's likely that they may speak about democratic governance. And I'd just like to know your thoughts on Kenya's situation right now in light of the recent media shutdown in the wake of the recent happenings in the country, the alleged police killings as put forward by the human rights organizations, and also the perceived defiance of court orders by the state. As a booking institution, what do you think is the current situation of democratic governance in Kenya, and what do we expect Rex Tillerson to tell President Kenyatta?
I can start. This is Vanda again, and I want to just make sure that this is my opinion, not Brookings. Brookings doesn't have an institutional opinion. So my take is that democracy is under very serious pressure in Kenya right now from two sources, both a deeper source of elections continually producing highly polarizing results that only a part of the country sees as legitimate and acceptable, and where a substantial minority or close to half of the country is persuaded that democracy is not delivering what it should be delivering to them. So that's the sort of deeper crisis. The immediate crisis is, of course, the response of the Kenyatta government to the Odinga maneuvers, including extremely heavy-handed measures, and I would say it perhaps without much exaggeration that we are seeing some of the most substantial onslaught on democratic principles in Kenya in two decades. Not just the shutdown of the media, not just the attacks on human rights groups, but issues that you pointed out, systematic harassment of political oppositions and visible, unaccountable impunity and defiance of the government, of the judiciary. And you know, this comes, of course, after sentiments that the new constitution, not so new now, had really changed the balance of power between the various branches that it empowered the judiciary in particular. So I think it's a very, there's a scores of deeper and immediate, very problematic developments, and certainly the secretary should very strongly speak against them.
Yeah, and this is Whitney just responding in my individual capacity. I mean, I don't think we can emphasize the importance of Kenya to the United States. Clearly, it's one of the U.S.'s strongest allies in the region, you know, from a security point of view, from a trade and investment point of view, and just given the length of interaction between the U.S. And Kenya that goes back to independence. And I think Secretary Tillerson has quite a challenge on his hand to sort of engage with the government in a serious way to encourage them to not overreact. As Vonda said, you know, the overreaction to Odinga's self-inauguration was really sort of a blow to the credibility of the government, certainly taking the TV stations off the air as well. Similarly with Odinga, I mean, he's got to be seen, he's got to be engaged in such a way that he starts working to develop the democratic fabric of that society, and I think that has to be one of the top priority issues that Secretary Tillerson has to engage when he's in the country.
Yeah, thank you.
Hi, this is Robbie Grammer from Foreign Policy. Two quick questions. The first, Do you think it's weird that there are no clear deliverables that the State Department has announced in the run-up to Tillerson's trip, or is it normal for a Secretary of State to do just a listening tour like this? And then the second one is, you know, Ethiopia is in the midst of this, you know, severe political crisis right now, and Tillerson's about to visit it. I mean, what will he have to do? What type of political tightrope will he have to rock? Will he have to walk to balance that as the crisis unfolds?
Well, just on the deliverables, I mean, in my experience, it is unusual for a Secretary of State to make a trip like this and to have no deliverables, to have no initiatives that they're ready to announce. Maybe they surprise us, but it's not, in my talking with folks in the administration, it's not clear that they do. And you know, as was mentioned earlier, as Honda mentioned, in November, Secretary Tillerson had a meeting here in Washington for 2 days with 37 foreign ministers from African countries. So you begin to ask, you know, okay, it's great that they're doing the consultations. They had a very substantive consultation in November. You know, he's going to do this extensive trip over the next week. You know, when do we get to see the outlines of what Trump Africa policy is? And so, you know, it may be a listening tour for him, but I think it's also a watching tour for many of us looking to see what programs and what areas this administration wants to address on the continent. And also, to what degree will there be continuity with programs initiated by previous administrations, Democratic and Republican, and to what degree will the Trump administration offer new initiatives?
So just to follow up on it, and I do think it would be unfortunate indeed if we come out with no deliverables, but it's still yet to be seen precisely what would be accomplished. So we'll be following this closely. The fact that he's going to Ethiopia, I think, was a good thing, because Ethiopia is also home to two of the Africa's main continental institutions, namely the African Union, but also the UNECA. And I think, too, that would have been a good opportunity, and if it's not on the agenda, it should have been, to have some serious discussion with African leaders, at the African Union, for example, in terms of what beginning to lay out the groundwork that could inform a U.S.-Africa strategy that is really fit for the 21st century. And as you know, sometime this month, the African Union, they're going to sign a continental free trade agreement that is going to integrate the whole continent of, you know, 1.2 billion people, combined GDP of about $3.5 trillion. We think these are all the positive developments. So the continent is moving in one direction, and we're just hoping the current administration is taking note and is also engaging the continent in a direction in which it's trying to move. The political situation in Ethiopia, I think, is going to be a very delicate one to kind of maneuver around, trying to balance out both the commercial interests, since, you know, you may know, the Ethiopia airline has bought like about $2 billion worth of aircraft from Boeing. But at the same time, too, making sure that the clear messages about the democratic process and governance is heard is going to be a bit of a challenge. And then we'll look to see what comes out of it and what signals we can extract in terms of how the administration intends to balance its commercial interest versus its commitment to the governance and democratic processes.
Vanda, again, here, I would add to that Ethiopia also is an interesting test case, not only in balancing the commercial versus governance objectives, but also in terms of balancing counterterrorism versus governance objectives. That's been an uneasy challenge for the United States and many countries, certainly in Africa, for a long time, with our counterterrorism interests with countries such as Kenya, Nigeria, and Ethiopia often, if not trumping, if I may abuse that word, at least strongly competing and downgrading with our political inclusion, good governance objectives. And all too often, that's been a wrong balance. All too often, we have given countries to an easy path on the governance issue, even if they, in the long term and even medium term, seep into the counterterrorism objectives and eviscerate and undermine and outright hollow out the counterterrorism objectives. So when Secretary Tillerson goes to Ethiopia, it's quite possible that there will not yet be a new prime minister, and it is, and even if there is a new prime minister, and even if he ends up being an Oromo, that alone is not sufficient to heal the country where the ethnic exclusion and ethnic tension had been building up for a very long time, well before 2015, and where yet all too often Washington and the West judge the government as an exemplar of effective leadership, despite the exclusion, and as, of course, a very close ally in counterterrorism objectives in the Horn, in Somalia, but throughout the Horn. And so it's very important that even if there is a government, even well, more important, even if there is a prime minister, that the secretary presses for much more ethnically inclusive governance and governance that gives greater space of freedom of expression, of freedom of association to people, not simply along ethnic division lines. To the larger question of is it weird that the secretary is going without very concrete issues to either ask or, more importantly, to offer and to lay out, I would say that, yes, this would be very weird for many another administration. It is not so weird for the Trump administration. If you look at the secretary's visit to Latin America about 3 weeks ago now, the tour was quite similar. It was, in some extent, trying to repair relations with even some of the closest allies who became deeply concerned about comments that the White House, that President Trump had made, and also to change the agenda of priority and importance of U.S. interests, often picking commercial ones over these political issues in a way that surprised and displeased the region. And certainly there was a sense, well, you know, at best the secretary is acting as kind of patch-up of very uncomfortable, very problematic statements coming out from the White House, and at worst not even accomplishing that. So quite, I think, surprise and disappointment with the visit there, with the best that could be said, well, at least he wasn't President Trump and saying things like President Trump. So hopefully in Africa that visit will bring more oomph and punch and be a little bit more forward-leaning and forward-moving than simply trying to address problematic, uncomfortable directions and statements.
Hi, this is John Agyenby from the Financial Times. I was wondering if we could sort of maybe turn the coin over, and rather thinking about Tillerson not coming with any deliverables, despite that, will his host perhaps look for some receivables? And what do you think his hosts will be looking for from him? How do you think they view Tillerson and the Trump administration at the moment? And secondly, to what extent is, as you, has been discussed, do you think, you know, sort of defense and terror is very much, anti-terror or counter-terrorism rather, is very much top of the agenda if one looks at the massive ratcheting up of U.S. involvement in Somalia and elsewhere? Is this very much, you know, do you, indicate some of the front and center of U.S. policy in Africa now. Thanks.
Yeah, so this is Whitney. I'll just start. So look, I think Tillerson will be received well. There's no question that African governments want to engage with the United States. I mean, it was important that, you know, all 37 nations were invited to Washington in November on relatively short notice, and they all came. So I think the African leaders who meet with Tillerson will be, you know, wanting to hear about U.S. thinking on a broad range of issues. security, trade and investment, economic development, and what is the Trump administration seeking to do. So I think I think from the African point of view, this is an opportunity to convey to Tillerson their priorities and to share with him and his delegation the kind of partnership with the U.S. that they're looking for.
Yeah, Wanda here. I would add to that. I think that's absolutely true. However, or in addition to that, in addition to listening to what they want, I think they'll be very strongly at this point looking for indications as to how the administration will move and has moved. They'll likely be asking questions about the very significant militarization of U.S. policy toward Africa and what's happening with the non-military elements. But to some of them, that might not be so uncomfortable and distressing. In fact, I think that several of the countries would very much like to hear to get a boost in military spending, boost in military engagement without having to worry about accountability, even accountability to the United States, but certainly accountability to their local population. And it's, of course, very important that that's not the message that's conveyed, that we do not soften with places like Kenya, like Ethiopia, like Nigeria, the message that U.S. military hardware, U.S. intelligence, U.S. technical training only comes in, or only should come in, with strict adherence to human rights, to civil liberties, that we do not indulge the behavior of Nigerian military in the north, that we do not indulge the systematic discrimination against Somalis, including Kenyan Somalis in Kenya, that the relationship is not simply shrunk to as long as you kill whoever the local terrorists are, we don't mess with your internal politics. And certainly in many of these countries, the atmosphere is very charged. So, you know, with Kenya, just look at the attacks that the U.S. ambassador has faced for very mild remarks that should be expected from the United States and from the U.S. ambassador. And one of the things that's been very distressing, I would say most distressing, is just even how many human rights groups, civil society groups, NGOs, too, have jumped on the ambassador with remarks such as, look at your own elections, how discrediting they were, you have no more moral authority to be telling us how we handle our internal politics. And we certainly want, I would certainly like to see the secretary reclaiming that moral ground, reclaiming very clear U.S. commitment to values of inclusive governance, respect for fundamental human rights.
Yeah, no, this is Koulibaly. I think the out of this trip, if the African leaders are really able to get some more clarity, that would be a good achievement. Because up until now, what we're getting is actually, or what they've been getting is in a bit of a mix of signals. We've had the President Trump has mentioned the commercial opportunities of the continent during his UN speech. I think that was well received and quite welcome. And then that contrasted a bit with him walking out of during the Africa session, during the G20 meeting, at a time when Germany was pushing for an important Africa agenda. And then the unfortunate alleged comments about Africa and Haiti, I think, was not quite well received on the continent, and the reactions have been quite thoughtful. So this would also be the opportunity for them to actually get and share also their perception of or their feelings about those comments, as well as what they hope to see in terms of U.S.-Africa cooperation, and reassert their commitment indeed to the willingness to work with the U.S. as Whitney mentioned, and then also was echoed off by the new president of the African Union, President Kagame. So I think this is a good trip, a good opportunity, and we just hope it's going to really begin the dialogue and restore the kind of trust and mutual respect that is indeed necessary for well and effective working foreign relations.
If I can just add one comment, you know, clarity is very important, and certainly there's not been much clarity from this administration on many foreign policy issues. But I would say that clarity alone is not sufficient. If the clarity is, yes, you have shrunk the relationship essentially just to counter terrorism, and it's up to you how you handle internal politics, then it's, in my view, even worse message than a lack of clarity.
Right, because there's a broad range of issues that need to be addressed, I think, as we're all aware, not just security, not just trade investment, not just governance, although these are top-line issues, but certainly issues of trafficking in people, the issues of migration, the issues of conservation, the issues of the youth. And the U.S. has been engaged on all these issues over the last several administrations. So, you know, hopefully what we get from this is, you know, a commitment by the U.S., by the Trump administration, to stay engaged on the continent across the board, and also some ideas on how to take that issue forward. Kuhl raised the issue of the Continental Free Trade Agreement. You know, the U.S. has been dealing with the African Growth and Opportunity Act, and I think there's a lot of, you know, folks questioning, where do we go from AGOA? Here's Africa moving toward more rapid regional integration. The European Union has been very active in creating free trade agreements through their economic partnership agreements. China, of course, has been very aggressive in making commercial loans available. And the U.S. is sort of still dealing with this position of a non-reciprocal trade agreement. So I think the time is now for more creative thinking in a number of areas.
Could I have a follow-up then to that, please? Oh, sorry. Could I just have a quick follow-up?
No, you go ahead.
To what extent do you think, you know, in the light of morale at the foggy bottom and just shrinking budgets, a lot of staff leaving, the lack of appointments, to what extent does the U.S. have the ability to project diplomatically in a way that it might have done 5-10 years ago?
It's a good question. You know, without an ambassador in South Africa, in DRC, in Tanzania, you know, clearly the U.S. Is constrained in its ability to project. But, I mean, this is the challenge to Secretary Tillerson. You know, how does he define the Trump administration's agenda on the continent, given all the issues that we've just spoken about, given the constraints that you've just identified? I mean, this is the ball's in his court to lay out what the Trump agenda in Africa is going to be.
Well, I think that this is Koulibaly. This kind of underscored the point I made earlier about some key personnel, senior people to handle Africa issues still having not been appointed. And as to the ambassador position Whitney mentioned, one would add also even the Africa key person at the Secretary of State, Assistant Secretary in charge of African Affairs, hasn't been appointed. So clearly one area where the administration's action become a bit unconstrained because those key people not being able to help push, which is obviously a quite vast agenda, and help to focus in on those specific strategies to engage the continent is indeed a major issue. And we'll be looking actually for those key appointments to kind of gauge the speed with which the administration is intends on rolling out a specific U.S.-Africa strategy. Not just on the existing programs and what they intend to do with those, but as well as also on what new initiatives they plan to initiate to kind of set their own legacy on U.S.-Africa relations.
This is Josh Letterman from AP. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
I was wondering, how directly do you think that Secretary Torsten will have to answer for the shithole comment from the president a while back? I mean, is this still a raw issue? Will African leaders be inclined to bring it up sort of specifically and by name, or will it sort of just be an undertone of the, you know, skepticism about, you know, the administration's commitment to the continent that we've been discussing?
So, I think that I doubt any of the leaders are going to bring it up, because I think they want to put that behind, put that in the past, close the chapter. But clearly civil society, clearly in the media, clearly in other sectors, that's going to come up. And I think, Secretary Tillerson has the opportunity to refer to President Trump's letter of January 25th, where he says that the United States profoundly respects the partnership, and that the United States deeply respects the people of Africa, and reaffirms a commitment to a strong and respectful relationship with African states. And I think if Secretary Tillerson really hits those notes and really underscores the profound respect that many Americans have for the people on the continent, that will be helpful to ensuring that this unfortunate moment is indeed in the past.
I agree, and I would add to that of course there are some concrete possibilities to demonstrate with fairly easy actions that desire to put aside, move behind, forget those comments that have to do with visa policies and countries on the continent that have been restricted in having access to the United States. For example, Thailand is a good example. There's been substantial engagement over the past 6 months since the list came out to beef up security, and so there is, for example, a possibility to outline during that visit that those measures have been taken out. There is greater satisfaction with safety now, and that some countries are moving beyond those lists at least.
All right, thank you. Do we have another question?
Yes, please. This is Catherine Hawkins. It seems that there's a lot of pressure building on South Sudan, and that some diplomats feel that putting more pressure on regional leadership, countries like Kenya or Ethiopia, Uganda is not on the list of countries he's visiting, but, you know, countries like this might be a way to increase pressure on the government. Have you heard anything from anybody at the State Department to suggest that South Sudan is going to be a topic of discussion when he goes to the AU, when he goes to Ethiopia or Kenya, anything like this?
It has to be on the agenda. There's no question. And traditionally, that's been, you heard Fonda Cool talk about the complexity of the relationship with Ethiopia. Ethiopia's has been at sort of the forefront of U.S. engagement with Sudan. And I don't think that's going to change, even given Ethiopia's own leadership challenges. But I haven't heard specifically what the administration is hoping to achieve.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
For me, but it's hard to imagine how the issue wouldn't come up.
But there's no plan. There's no specific thing that they're thinking.
I have not heard anything either.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Any more questions?
I'll throw one more in here. If you don't mind, I was just wondering if you could just talk about the dynamic with China and you know, how much of a how much or to what extent African countries are looking to Tillerson in the U.S. to sort of see, you know, whether they, how much of a counterweight they intend to be to, you know, Chinese influence on the continent, and whether, you know, at this point, you know, most African countries are grateful for China as an alternative to the U.S. or, you know, resentful of some of the terms that come with that, and hoping that, you know, that the U.S. would sort of supplant that.
I think my reading of the African countries' position is that they're ready to basically do business, and they're ready to partner with any countries that is also willing to partner with them in a way that it makes sense to them and furthers their agenda. So, and in the terms of the U.S. Africa versus China dynamics, it doesn't necessarily have to be, I think, an either or. The opportunities for engagement from different partners in the continent is quite great. The key challenge of the continent currently is actually infrastructure financing. And there, if you look at the financing gap, it's quite huge. You're looking at close to $50 billion in unfunded needs. And more recent estimates even suggest it could be double that amount. So clearly there's room for engagement with multiple partners. And Africa is ready and open for business. And the Chinese have understood it and have been more proactive and aggressive in a way that it's benefiting them. Some of the firms actually operating on the continent, the Chinese firms, about half of them actually engage in the continent for the long term in terms of the kind of investments they make in capital. And about a third of the firms, Chinese firms, actually have reported profits of 20% or higher. So this just shows like a vast, diverse, and sophisticated engagement across the continent in a very proactive way, in a way that we would hope to see the U.S. also move in that direction. Otherwise, obviously, as I mentioned in my opening statement, it risks actually falling further behind.
Yeah, I think it's important to underscore what Kuhl just said. It's not an either-or dynamic, nor is it a zero-sum dynamic. But the reality is that China has just been much more proactive in making resources for infrastructure available. Currently, China is lending at about $7 to $8 billion a year for infrastructure development for commercial loans. At the 2015 FOCAC in Johannesburg, President Xi committed to $60 billion of commercial loans. In the U.S., you know, we're at about the $8 billion mark for development assistance. And we really haven't been able to sort of turn the corner to give American companies the kind of support and help, frankly, that I think many need to sort of mitigate the risk of getting into the African market, to get involved in these infrastructure projects. Having said that, there's no question that, you know, there's a great appetite for U.S. investment in the continent. You know, American firms generally hire locally, they train locally, they promote locally, they conform with the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act by and large. And this makes American companies, you know, attractive business partners. Plus they've got, you know, world class skills and quality products that they bring to the table. So it's a very complex dynamic between the U.S. and China on the continent, and it would be great if Secretary Tillerson were to come forward with some ideas, given his experience as a U.S. businessman, about how to help U.S. companies become more active in Africa.
I would add two more points on China. One is that in background briefings about Secretary Tillerson's trip, U.S. State Department officials emphasized very strongly their concern about China's role in creating new indebtedness in Africa, highlighted it as a major, major problem, and certainly something that the Secretary would want to tackle during this trip and that the U.S. administration wants to tackle. That's, of course, interesting, and my colleagues can come in on that, because there has been prior grumbling from African countries about the role of U.S. private sector in loans and generating new indebtedness. So there could be quite some pushback about U.S. Hiding its geopolitical confrontation with China, including about China's military base in Africa, et cetera, behind the words of indebtedness. I believe that there are real concerns with indebtedness and that should not be allowed to escalate and happen, and that those are real and genuine. But nonetheless, it's up to the administration to persuade our African interlocutors that this concern is genuine and that the U.S. is doing its own share in mitigating its responsibility for indebtedness, or for that matter, for the lack of finance that and lack of investment that my colleagues have emphasized. China is also very interesting in another way, because it's long embraced what seemed to have been, perhaps seem to still are, some of the inklings of the Trump administration in terms of we deal with governments, we focus on the capital, we make deals with them, and we don't tell countries how to run their internal politics. Yet that strategy has backfired for China across the world. It's not so easy to take such an approach, and it has generated difficulties with China, as Chinese workers often create all kinds of insensitivities and problems, including in Africa. And there's been quite some substantial backlash also in other continents, also in Latin America, with Chinese diplomats only very slowly realizing that it might be quite an illusion to think that you can simply make political deals and not worry about what kind of impact they have on the people. Ethiopia is a prime example, again, way before the 2016 Oromo issues. There have been much larger underlying issues surrounding land expropriation, although land is nominally held by the state, so I use the term expropriation loosely here. That involves the government leasing vast tracts of land to multiple countries, including Chinese businesses, that created a lot of the underlying tension, in addition to the ethnic dimension that we are seeing exploding. Finally, let me also talk about conservation and China, again, a very mixed record. On the one hand, China has finally outlawed its legal ivory market, and it's now in the implementation phase. It now remains up to China to be seriously and diligently implementing dismantling of its now fully illegal ivory market. And that's been an issue with many countries in the region, not a simple issue. Some countries very much were hoping to be able to sell more legal ivory, the southern African countries, for example. But at the same time, Chinese businesses, Chinese diplomats, Chinese nationals have been some of the very prime offenders in wildlife trafficking and poaching in Africa, both in the very iconic species such as elephants and ivory, but also often the mere presence of extensive number of Chinese workers building railroads, building highways, comes along with substantial decimation of surrounding, not only natural habitats, but surrounding species that are being consumed or trafficked into China. And so I think China quite exposes the pitfalls of believing that one can only deal with governments and let the governments handle and, frankly, repress the populations and be indifferent to issues of quality standards in products, human rights, civil rights, environmental issues.
So just to add quickly, so that I think the point Wenda raised on the debt issue is indeed one that is important and has been at the center of the of concerns even voiced by the State Department. So there's now obviously a a rising level of debt on the continent. On average, it's still not that high, but the pace of increase has been something that's been concerning. And in some countries, it's been approaching actually critical levels. And the state has actually invited the Chinese in the past to come and discuss it. And the countries having come off the debt forgiveness episode of the earlier in the 2000 through mid 2000s, there's really concern now that debt is again creeping up, and they see China as playing a bit of a role in it, and would like to see China try to become a bit more restrained in the way it conducts lending on the continent. But again, there's also been areas where they've find ground to collaborate, and I think China was quite helpful for them on the issues of South Sudan, as well as also on the assistance on different UN operations. So I would say it's a multi-dimensional aspect, the U.S., the tripartite, U.S., Africa, China, and I think there's understanding that they could collaborate where it makes a lot of sense, and the U.S. can also learn something from China as an economy that has more recent experience with economic development. And then where their attention work together to set up to resolve those on the continent.
Thank you. Do we have another question? Okay, well, it doesn't seem like we have any more questions. I'd like to thank everybody for joining the call, especially Dr. Koulibaly, Bonda, and Whitney. Again, this is on the record, so feel free to quote them. I will have a transcript available later today, and we'll be sure to send it out. And if you want to follow up with any of our scholars, please get in touch with me, and I can connect you. So thank you again for joining us.
No, thank you, Christina.
Thanks, Christina. Thanks, Joel.
Thanks, bye.